Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's Unified, U-N-I-F-Y-D, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
All right, welcome into another episode of the Goodman and Hummel podcast. I'm Jeff Goodman. He is Robbie Hummel. And we got a great episode for you today, an absolutely terrific episode. We have not just one Hurley. We have both Hurley brothers. We got Danny and Bobby on, and Hummel's never really been around these guys. So this is going to be an interesting experience for Rob.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm surprised that they will agree to come on with you with all the shit you blow. Both of them, but yeah. I'm excited.
I mean, listen, I don't know why. I can't answer that question, but they'll be here. As far as I know, they're going to be showing up here in about 10 minutes. So make sure you stick around for that. Make sure you subscribe to the pod. Obviously, Goodman Hummel pod every single week. Robbie is back on his grind. I'll give you credit. Like, I make fun of you a lot. But you are grinding right now. You're everywhere. Between ESPN and BTN, you are everywhere. Last night, you were at the game of the night, and maybe, I don't know if it was the most controversial ending of the year, but certainly up there with Ohio State Rutgers and how this thing concluded with a game winner in which we saw a player Holden.
Tanner Holden just kind of goes out of bounds. He's just watching the ball, and he's unaware, I would say, of where he is on the court. It was a great game, and it's unfortunate that the ending, I think, was affected by a call like that, especially because Rutgers played so well. You could also make the case, though, that if Caleb McConnell makes the free throw, it's a moot point. The game is over.
That's right.
But I think when you go back and watch – I know there's a gray area with the officiating where you could make the case his momentum took him out of bounds. I disagree with that. I wish I had realized he made the shot. We showed the reaction of the players, and then it was like 20 seconds to off air. One replay.
Yeah.
And I didn't, I was watching Thornton, and I think it's also tough when you're doing these games, you know, that's on the other side of the floor and you don't really look at your monitor. You know, you're watching with your own eyes.
Right. You're watching the ball. Yeah. You're watching the ball.
And with the one replay I saw, I didn't even think about, well, maybe Holden was out of bounds. You know, that never even crossed my mind. So I saw it after the fact, after the game ended immediately, and it's like, oh my God, that should have been out of bounds. I mean, he's out, he comes back in. I don't think he got 2 feet in, and it sounds like he can't be the first person to touch the ball anyway.
That's right. He went out. The only way it would have been legal is if he had kind of been pushed out or
forced out.
Yeah. And he was not forced out.
So. I'm really interested in, you know, this is what Friday, we're recording this at 10:52 Central. I have not seen a statement from the Big Ten. And I think they owe it to Rutgers to issue that. I mean, just to say, and not that it changes the game.
They're not going to do that. They never do that. No, I mean, I don't know when the last time
I don't think that's, I've never seen that happen.
Ever.
But I do think they owe it to Rutgers to say, all right, we made a mistake.
And we want to say, Rob, honestly, Roger Ayers might be as good of an official as there is on the planet.
Totally. I think it's a tough play to officiate because you're watching the ball. I don't know why Tanner Holden is just backing out of bounds. I have no explanation for that. However, I think the official's job is hard enough as it is. I think, and it's not that I know shit about officiating, But if it was up to me, I would say any game-winning shot is subject to review. It's like a touchdown in football. Every scoring play in football is. So if we're going to have a game-winning shot, you could review anything in the play. Right. And then it takes that away where they might – I think they went and looked at it for the clock, I believe. Yeah,
but they can't look at it for him coming out of bounds.
But I think they went and looked at it, and I'm sure when they did – those guys saw that and were like, oh, shit.
We screwed up.
They had to. I mean, they had to do that.
Yep.
But I think that we've got to help the refs in that situation. And if it's that important of a play, game-winning shot, last play of the game, everything's reviewable.
Listen, I could not agree with you more. I mean, that absolutely should be changed. Maybe it will be. I don't know. But you're right. Last, you know, final play, everything should be reviewable. Everything's on the table for that. All right. Let's move forward. We've got some – in superlatives that we're going to go through kind of rapid fire here. Within about 5 minutes, we're going to bang through some of these, and I'm dying to get your take, to hear your take on a few of these. So let's start with probably maybe the hardest of all. Yeah. Okay. House on the line. You got to bet your house on one team.
This is not how you said. Oh, you made it sound like it was the best team right now, not to win the national title.
No, I'm saying you got right now your house on the line for one team. Because right now most people say, all right, Purdue, maybe the best team, Virginia, whatever. That's pretty easy. Let's look down the line and say, what's the one team? Right now I'm betting, I got to bet my house on a future for one team.
So that's not the best team right now. You're saying the best team.
Right. I'm saying who you're going to put all the chips in on to win this whole thing. Who is it? Who are you putting all your money on to win this whole thing this year?
This is right an impossible. It's an impossible question. I know. This is a different question than what we talked about last night.
All right. Well, you've got to adapt. Didn't Matt Painter teach you anything?
Yes. Shut up.
Adapt.
I mean, I had four teams in consideration.
Do you want me to go first? I'll buy you.
I was just saying, I had four teams in consideration for the best team right now of Purdue, Virginia, Houston, UConn.
Okay. Yep.
A futures bet.
Yep.
Christ. I will go Virginia. I love their defense. I think their offense is more than good enough to win. I like their guard play. They have a point guard who's won the national title. I'll go Virginia.
I'm going Kentucky. I know you're going to say like I'm crazy, but listen, they might have, to me, the best point guard and big man in the country. When it's all said and done, Cason Wallace might be the best overall point guard in the country, and Oscar Tshiebwe is the best big man in the country, or one of them. And then they've got shooters who, again, they got to get CJ Frederick going, but I'm going with Kentucky there. And they've got also plenty of motivation.
Did you pick them to win it all at the start of the season?
No. No.
Oh, you didn't? Okay. I thought you did. No. I was going to say doubling down.
All right. Biggest surprise so far is who, Rob?
I'll go Maryland. I think Kevin Willard's done a phenomenal job. He took a core of players with Dante Scott, Julian Reese, Hakeem Hart, and he's mixed in some really good transfers with Don Carey, and really, Jameer Young has been awesome. Ian Martinez has been good off the bench. I worry about their depth, but they've been terrific, and I've seen them a lot, so I'm going with Maryland.
I'm with you. I have Maryland too. I don't know who else you could pick. They're by far the biggest surprise to me because most people had them as an NIT team, and Willard's done a great job so far. Biggest disappointment.
This is easy. I mean, North Carolina.
Yeah. The only other one in the equation would be Villanova to me.
Yeah, but I mean, their injuries have certainly, Whitmore, that makes it tough. That's right. Carolina, with the expectations and the players they have back, they are the hands down most disappointing team so far.
Biggest pretender, which is a team currently in the top 15 that you just don't, you're not buying at all.
I am going to go with Auburn just because of their schedule. I mean, I looked it up last night. Their best win is against St. Louis, who's 54 on KenPom. They beat Northwestern by one, who then went and lost to Pitt by 30. They just haven't played anybody. So until they do, I just can't feel good about saying that they're not a pretender in the AP top 15.
I can't believe we've now agreed on Maryland, Carolina, and Auburn, all three of them. I'm with you, Auburn.
I think every answer has been so obvious, though.
Yeah, they kind of have. I mean, Auburn, you could probably come up with maybe another pretender, but Auburn just doesn't. They haven't done anything to deserve, to warrant being in the top 15. I don't have them in the top 15 in mine. I'm closer to like 22, but regardless. All right, best early season coaching job is who?
I'm going to go Matt Painter. And I think you could go Danny Hurley. I think you could go Tony Bennett. But I think the way that Purdue is playing, the way their freshmen are contributing. I mean, Fletcher Lawyer and Braden Smith are studs.
Yep.
And Zach Edey has become Shaq. I think the way that he's playing, I'd go with Coach Payne.
Yeah, to me, it's Payne or Willard or Hurley. You can go with any of those three.
Yeah, and Kevin Willard should be in there too. Yes.
I'm going to go with Willard. Just because, again, the expectations were nothing. So I'll go with him. Player of the year, Zach Edey. No argument, right? I don't even know if there's anybody else. Who's two? I don't even know who two is right now.
That's a good question. But the fact
Trace Jackson Davis, maybe?
He'd be in the conversation. I think the fact that Zach Edey has 9 consecutive KenPom MVPs is honestly, I want to know what the record is. I would love to know what the most consecutive that KenPom has ever had. But, I mean, he's been unreal. So I guess Trace Jackson Davis would be in that conversation. I'm trying to think off the top of my head who else would be there.
That's it for me. All right.
You have two guys.
We got to end this portion of it. We got to get to the Hurleys. They're waiting on us. We'll talk to you later. Goodman and Hummel podcast. Here is Danny and Bobby Hurley. These days, every new potential hire can feel like a high-stakes wager for your small business. You want to be 100% certain that you have access to the best qualified candidates available. That's why you have to check out LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn Jobs helps find the right people for your team faster and for free. I've used it multiple times, and it's super easy. And again, I've gotten really good people from it. So it makes complete sense. And again, like I've had experience doing this. All you have to do, add your job and the purple hashtag hiring frame to your LinkedIn profile to spread the word that you're hiring. Simple tools like screening questions make it easy to focus on candidates with just the right skills and experience so you can quickly prioritize who you'd like to interview and hire. It's why small businesses rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires versus leading competitors. LinkedIn Jobs helps you find the qualified candidates you want to talk to faster. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/good. Again, that's linkedin.com/good to post your job for free. Terms and conditions apply. All right, welcome to a special edition of the Goodman and Hummel podcast. It is special because we've got the Hurley experience. And I wanted to bring Robbie Hummel into the Hurley experience. I've done this, I don't know how many times we did. We probably did it 3 or 4 years in a row with Danny and Bob. And we've taken the last couple of years off. I don't know why, maybe the pandemic. I have no idea why, but I'm happy to have you guys back on, and we're bringing Robbie Hummel into the family, the Hurley experience. So, welcome guys. Thanks for being on. And, listen, I'm going to start with this. I was told by a Hurley relative, the quote goes something like this. If you guys lose, you're miserable. If you guys win, you're still miserable. You guys are 19-1 combined right now. Can you smile, Dan? Can you smile?
Who I don't know who said that.
I'm not giving it away. That's a source. That's a source within the family.
That's what I'm mostly thinking about, like who's running their mouth right now within the family. No. Listen, losing, definitely, like complete misery. But you do get, I don't know, Bob, like 12 hours of relief, 14 hours of relief after a win, right? I mean, it feels awesome until it turns back to.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know this, Dan, more than the losing and being miserable. How about the day of the game experience? How your body feels the day of the game, just the pressure, the stress, the anxiety, what you put your body through and how you feel. I think that's worse than whether the result is winning or losing. It's just what leads into the game until the ball gets thrown in the air for hours and hours. It's a miserable feeling.
You're lifeless, right? Like a weakness until you get, you're right, until you go down the tunnel, right, Bob? Mm-hmm. And the anthem plays and then now it's fight or flight and it's time to fight.
Yeah, I would say too, even if you want to take it another step further, it's like the hour before the game, right? Because like we've done everything we could do at that point, right? You know what you're going to run your first couple of possessions. It's and now it's a very lonely feeling. Like sometimes I'll talk to you like an hour before the game or vice versa, because we both like we have nothing left to do. I mean, we've thought about the game as much as we can. We have no idea what they're doing in warmups. We have no idea, like, you know, ultimately how we're going to play. We're starting to lose control over that, you know.
So what are you talking about? When you call each other an hour before the game, what is that conversation about?
It's just, oh man, how do you feel? Are you hanging in there? It's brutal right now. What are they doing? You know, I don't know what's going to happen to me in 1 hour. And like all the preparation is done, the film study, the, you know, knowing what you're going to do the first few possessions. I always ask Bob, you're watching the clock just tick away.
You know? I ask Bob how much longer he wants to do this. You know, I'll ask him that like right before the game, right, Bob? Like, hey, how much longer do we have to do it? How much longer do you want to do it?
And what's, no Bob, what's Bob's answer? Generally, what is Bob's answer?
He says longer. We have to do it. He says we have to keep going. But the and then there's no one around you, Bob, right? Everyone just tries to stay away from you. You spend a lot of that time in isolation, right? And then you have you go do your personnel, you do your game keys, your game goals. You get these little pockets, but pretty much you are just isolated and alone by yourself. Just
you blame them? It's like you blame them for getting the hell away from you guys.
Yeah, it's like a pitcher, though, that's throwing a no-hitter or something, right? That's kind of how you feel, right? Everyone avoids you. They don't want to say the wrong thing to you. It's crazy.
Danny, I want to ask you, I was reading one of Jeff's really stupid preseason articles, and he was ranking the top 20 recruiters in college basketball. And I just wanted to give you the floor to allow you to address Jeff here after not putting you on the list, which with your team is clearly – a mistake.
Yeah, I mean, there's a number of ways. Hey, Rob, thanks for that question too.
You're welcome. I knew you'd so I'm glad we could start with
welcome,
that.
Welcome to the Hurley Brother Pod here. Hey, listen, there's a lot that goes into, I think, you know, being a great recruiter beyond just getting four or five star players, however you get them. Obviously, recruiting for me is to get a player to want to play for you because they believe in the way you're going to develop them. They want you to be in their coach. They believe in the values of your program. You sell all that. And that to me is recruiting, not other reasons why a player goes to a particular school. Also part of making you a top 20 or top 25 recruiter, you know, is the success of young players in your program, the development piece, right? Like did young players come in and crush it? And then how well did you evaluate? Did you take like a top 75, top 100 player? Did they become a lottery pick? Like that is also too. So without saying what I really want to say, that's how I'll say that.
I mean, you can say what you want to say. I would love to hear it.
you've done it before with me. Both of you have at times. I still want to go back to the years ago. I don't know if Bobby remembers this. I'm on SportsCenter early on. This is like year two of Bobby's tenure at Arizona State. So they're not very good. He's inherited nothing. And I'm on with Matt Barry, who's an Arizona State grad. And obviously I'm an Arizona grad. And I'm having fun poking Matt Barry at that point that Arizona is better than Arizona State. Well, I get a call after from somebody close again, a source close to Bobby, I'll say a source. And he says, Bobby's pissed. And I'm like, what did I do? What? It's all in fun here. Bobby's pissed. You might want to be careful. So then I see Bobby. All of a sudden, Bobby's name comes up on my phone. I'm like, ignore. I'm not ready for this right now.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I've learned to not pay attention to anything anymore, really. You know, whether I make any lists of great recruiters, that's what people say about me. I'm a great recruiter, but I can't really coach. So I wish I fully understood that. I wish someone would be a little more specific about what area of coaching that I'm not excelling in. So just I could become better. But yeah, I don't pay much attention to that stuff anymore, Jeff, what people say or recruiting rankings or, you know, any
rankings. You guys are off social media. Aren't you both?
I think we've won, you know, games that should put us squarely in the conversation to be in the top 25 if you just look at our Michigan win alone. But I'm not going to complain about that and just going to, you know, keep plugging along.
Jeff mentioned you guys are 19-1. It seems like in years past when one of you guys was winning, the other maybe was having a tough start to the season. But with both teams playing so well, what's it been like behind the scenes in those conversations? Have they been positive? I mean, I know, like you said, you guys talk a lot.
I mean, for me, it was like, you know, the Michigan win was unbelievable. We won that championship in Brooklyn. I know Dan was so supportive because, you know, two games earlier, we had an overtime loss to Texas Southern. So that's when we're at our best to kind of pick each other up in our darkest moments. So he's, you know, always there for me in that regard. And then it was so awesome to get, you know, we were ahead of the curve on the holiday weekend. So I finally had Thanksgiving at my house for like the first time in 6 years. And I was able to invite a couple of coaches over on my staff. And we sat back and watched Dan start in Portland and beat Oregon and really enjoyed a couple of days of watching him compete. But we were on totally different spectrums. Like he was suffering and, you know, in game mode. And I was kind of celebrating a holiday, which was really weird.
Yeah. I mean, Robbie, we've both won a lot. You know, we Bob's won a lot at Arizona State. I've won a lot here. It's just rare that we've, you know, been on a streak together, you know, where the conversations and the vibes have just, you know, been so positive because it's hard to go on long winning streaks like this in college. Right. And at the same time, and, you know, Bob's right. I mean, the best thing you could do, you know, again, I think maybe the last thing I saw, you know, before I turned off my notifications, I think I did it, you know, for the most part last year after we lost to Providence at home. It just got too much. And then everyone but Jeff. And then when Jeff put out his top 20 recruiter list, then I muted Jeff too. And so now somebody's probably gonna get back to me and he'll put one out like this is who Jeff is too. He's gonna put out like a top 21 list of recruiters. I'll be 21st at like 5 o'clock tonight.
That might be true.
An addendum will be issued by Jeff. One more coach.
We'll add Dan on there. You know, watching you in Portland, and I texted Bob right away on this. I'm watching you, and I think it might have been that first game, Dan. And I you know, generally with both of you guys, when I see you play in person, I want to sit right behind the bench. I do. I want to sit right behind you guys because the entertainment value, you guys are entertaining. I love it. I do. I mean, I get a kick out of it. The intensity, the emotion, all of that. It's unmatched for the most part in college basketball. It really is. And I love that about college. Like, that's what college is about, right? So I'm watching Dan, and I'm like, who is this guy? Like, what happened to Dan? Where'd he go? And then at the end of the game, I went up to him, Bob, and I'm like, I'm like, Dan, like, what the hell happened to you? Like, you were the most mellow I've ever seen you. So what does he do? He rolls back his sleeves, Bob. And he's like, yeah, like, I got a new outlook on life here. I wrote coach your team on my wrist. And sure enough, in this like marker, like he probably got it like right before the game and just like some random pen. And he just starts writing, like jamming down on his wrist, coach your team. Bob, like, what did you think when you heard that?
I wasn't surprised, you know. I mean, Dan's a unique person. I mean, yeah, and you wouldn't normally see that type of thing done. But, yeah, I mean, it's not shocking. I mean, I know you seem to be surprised by it, but
a little.
Yeah, I mean, but I don't know. I mean, I think Dan is calmer because, you know, he knows what he has. You know, if you feel a little better, it's a little easier. You don't have to be as aggressive with officials if you have the type of team that Dan has right now.
And Jeff, I mean, I go years 5 and 6 at Rhode Island when we were really good and we were, you know, postseason A-10 champs, regular season champs, getting to the tournament, winning games. I wasn't really like, you know, you become more maniacal and more of that fireball when you're, you know, when you're building a program, you're trying to instill an intensity. Obviously, every possession is life or death when you're not very good, you know, to either stay in a game or to develop a mentality and a fight in your program. And as your team gets better and as your talent gets better, you know, you could step back and just coach your guys and not get caught up in everything else.
Danny, there are people that are saying that you guys are the best team in the country. You know, what are your thoughts on even hearing that?
I think we've played great to this point. I think we do the really hard things well, right? Like we really guard people, you know, both in the half court. We don't give you anything in transition defense. You know, we potentially have a chance to dominate you on the backboard. You know, we get maybe the best center play in the country with what we have at center. And then on the wing, we have two, you know, potential first round draft picks if they continue to play the way they're playing. And Andre Jackson and Jordan Hawkins, you know, a four man, I think, you know, probably doesn't get enough credit in Caravan. There's not many freshmen that you could afford to start on like a top five, top 10, whatever we are, a team in the country right now. And then we got tremendous depth and shooting and just the pieces fit. But you know, it's been a great start to the year, you know, for a team that was picked fourth in the league, you know.
Bobby, you went to the portal for your team this year. How is recruiting that? How is it different than normal recruiting? And have you had to change your approach or learn hard lessons, I guess, from doing that?
Well, I think you got to supplement your team through the portal. I think we were able to retain 6 guys. So just having a core coming back was helpful. The guys that have been in the program and been understand our system and what we're trying to do. And we were able strategically, you know, to go out there and get a guy like Warren Washington right now. That's interior wise, giving us a big boost around the basket, transfer from Nevada. And then we got the Cambridge brothers who have been outstanding in their own ways. You know, Dez Cambridge was the MVP up in New York in that event, you know, could really put points on the board. We struggled to score last year, so he's kind of instant offense for us. Devin Cambridge has been just done a little bit of everything, does all the intangibles and is, you know, a highlight reel waiting to happen in the open court, really gets off his feet and kind of gets us going, you know, emotionally. And then Frankie Collins, if this coaching thing doesn't work out, I think, you know, I should focus on picking point guards because I got a knack for that. Frankie has been just a tremendous leader, gets guys involved, plays both ends of the court, got great vision. And even Austin Nunez, you know, top 75 freshman, was Pac-12 freshman of the week a few weeks back and was great up in New York. So, you know, we've done very well through the portal and, you know, we're going to continue to go that route strategically.
Is it different though? Like when you evaluate a player out of the portal versus evaluating a high school kid for either of you guys?
I mean, it's important to have honest conversations, just like you would with a high school kid, just about role and, you know, expectations and things like that. But I mean, I like it because, you know, you could reprogram a guy a little bit, but you're getting a guy that has so much experience, potentially played a lot of college basketball games. And it's not like, you know, bringing in a high school guy.
And Dan, you didn't go the portal a year ago. It was like you and Jay Wright were like the only ones that really didn't go portaling a year ago. This past year, you did it. You made obviously a choice there, and it's really worked out for you. You got, I think, four guys maybe out of the portal, and they've all been good. Like Tristan's been much better than I thought he'd be. Joey's been awesome as an addition from San Diego. The other two guys have fit in very well as well. But was it a change where you were like 2 years ago, hey, I don't know if I want to do it, and then this past year you're watching everybody else and you were almost like, we got to go this route?
Yeah. Listen, we had you know, a group that had been together, RJ Cole and Tyrese Martin and Isaiah Whaley and Tyler Polley and Jalen Gaffney, a group of guys that, man, that had taken a program that was at the bottom of the AAC, you know, had gone from what happened in 2014 to, you know, I think being closer to a 200 KenPom than a 100 KenPom, right, when you get here. So that we owed it to that group. I think, you know, getting us to the tournament in year three, you know, here and losing that first game to Maryland and then, you know, running it back with that group. I mean, that group had really solidified the program and turned things around. And we brought that group back and, you know, played to a five seed, but struggled in the tournament in large part because, you know, the group from an offensive standpoint didn't fit great. We didn't have enough shooting, didn't have enough skill, didn't have enough passing, didn't have enough positional versatility. And, you know, I on the flight, you know, the flight back from Buffalo, you know, it's like, or the bus, man, I can't even remember. You know, I knew that we knew what we had with Andre Jackson, Adama Sanogo, and Jordan Hawkins. I knew I had a big three. You know, I knew I had a big three. I knew I had Klingon. I knew I had Caravan. I knew I had Samson Johnson, who really hasn't had a chance to show what he could do yet this year. But I knew that we needed some older perimeter people, you know, that that could supplement that core group of like homegrown, you know, high pedigree blue chip recruits that we got straight out of high school. So, but we were honest with the transfers. You know, you'd be competing for a roll off the bench. You'd be competing to be a fifth starter, a first guard off the bench. And I think that's the only way that it works with the transfers is if you're very, very clear during the process about what the reality will be when they get there, or else you could have some real chemistry and culture problems when you get them.
All right. So I'm going to give you guys a hypothetical, and it's my favorite hypothetical like ever. March 23rd. Madison Square Garden, Sweet 16, UConn, Arizona State, Hurley versus Hurley in the Sweet 16. Like, hey, look, how insane would you be? Would you sign up for that now, Bob?
I mean, I'm looking across my office and there's a picture of me guarding Dan in the Sweet 16. So that's the last time that I'd like to see that.
You really wouldn't. If I said to you right now, you could have a Sweet 16 appearance,
oh, nice,
but it only involves you having to coach against Dan. Like, they both have it. They both have this picture.
That's awesome, though. That is really cool.
Look at this. That is phenomenal. Phenomenal. Same picture.
Same picture.
Holy shit. That's phenomenal.
That is
very cool.
Crazy.
Would you take it? Would you sign up for that? Or would you say, like, I can't do it?
So what does that mean? Does it mean that, like, we don't make the tournament or we lose?
Yeah, it means you do not make the tournament or you go to the Sweet 16, but you have to play against Dan.
Wow. I think we both would say yes to that. I mean, we have to do it. If we have to do it, we'll do it. You know, we wouldn't want to do it. But
yeah. Which side would your dad sit on?
We'll do the half jacket again.
Right in the middle. Literally right in the middle. Your mom?
Half jacket. They'll do like the half sweatshirt.
It'll be Hey, Dan, there's no way you're your mom's favorite. There's no way. I'm not buying it.
No, I think she feels the same way about both of us. I mean, we're both like the same guy.
Yeah.
I look at it like this, though. For me, I, you know, I you know, obviously my relationship with Bob, it's best friend, we live the same exact life to a T up to this day. It's crazy, right? Like, except he was the seventh pick and I was a gym
teacher. You were teacher. The 700th.
I was a phys ed and driver's ed teacher my first year, but out of college. But, you know, like even I felt like, playing Nate this year, and I said this to Bob, it's like, trying to make these games just about, execution and poise and playing to your identity and not getting wrapped up in like crowd or opponent, and I think I've benefited a lot from, just talking to Bob a lot in the preseason and his mentality. I mean, you talked about my focus. I mean, his focus, doing what he did, having to play that brutal game in Texas before going to the Garden, and then coaching the way he coached, through the VCU game and then the dominant performance against Michigan, that's rubbed off. I mean, I've taken a lot from Bob and the way he's managed himself and controlled his emotions and has coached as good as anybody in the country to this part of the year.
Growing up, I had a younger brother, and I certainly saw how competition could bring out interesting things. Whether it was working together on staffs at Rhode Island or Wagner or growing up as kids, was there ever a time where you guys were going to beat each other's ass? Because I've seen that. I'm curious. I'm sure there was.
I mean, it's like two brothers that are, playing football or, playing one-on-one. I mean, you're always going to have some, I guess, heated moments, some arguments. And then all of a sudden, one day it shifts and becomes like when you hit a certain age where there is no more, competition, and these guys are just so tight, everything you've been through together. That's how I looked at it.
You grew up in Jersey City, Bob, and you're just always outside playing stuff, right? And you're always playing stuff with all types of kids. Jersey City is the most diverse city in the country. It's actually fact. So like you're always outside playing competitive games. You're going to get into fights. You get into fights with your brother. You get into fights with Savino, right? You're going to just get into fights, right? And then Bob, I'll say this, at Wagner and then at Rhode Island, like I'm just going to call Bob out. Like if he would suggest like a defense or me run something, and if I didn't do it, he would get super pissed.
What if it didn't work then? You did it and it didn't work? What would you
say? I would glare, but I'm that's not my thing. I see other head coaches like rip assistants during a game about a scouting out under they missed. I'm like, how is that guy even, you suck as a big man coach because your guy like didn't like get position. Like, and then Bob at
I would suggest things over suggest. Right. If I would suggest it one time and then say it again and maybe a third time, and then I usually would get the look like, stop.
Yeah. What was there? Do you remember, Bob? Like, do you remember when you were kids? Give me a great story of when you guys were kids and either you went at it with each other or had to have each other's back. Do you remember like one in Jersey City?
Have each other's back. Oof. At the time, we were throwing a baseball in the backyard, Dan, and the ball went through the window into our basement where we stayed, the two of us, and we kind of covered up the window for what was it, like a day and a half or 2 days, until Dad found out about it, and that was a tough situation, right, Dan? We had to work our way through that one. I don't know why that one just came to mind, but.
We tried to get our bopchi, my mom's mom, to blame it on the garbage men, right? The garbage men in Jersey City, in our neighborhood, they didn't do a great job. They left a lot of debris. And so we tried to blame them. But I remember, I was, Bob was home. I was running my mouth in the Country Village courts. And I got into a fight with a kid in Bob's, maybe a year older than Bob. I'll leave him nameless. I think he lived on Sycamore, and I was running my mouth. He was a 4 years older than me, and he was whooping me. And somebody I think ran home and told Bob, and Bob ran and beat his ass. Came out
and I think he was probably, I think he was 1 year older than me in school, so that gives you more cred then.
I was big for Bob,
and no one would try me, you know. So that was good. That worked out nicely.
Did you guys get the belt from your dad or no? I think you can admit that now. I don't think if it happened today, you couldn't admit it. Your dad would end up in jail. But I think from 20, 30 years ago, you can admit if your dad got you with a belt. Did he? How tough was he on you guys, though?
He was tough.
Dan, you want to take this? Or?
Yeah, he was tough. I mean, he was tough.
Bob wants no part of this one.
Oh, my dad was tough. I mean, but, you know, it's like anything else. You know, he cared. I mean, he cared so much about his players, cared so much about us. You know, he showed his love for us through the time he spent with us and the sacrifices he made. You know, not doing the college thing, not doing the career thing, because he wanted to coach Bob in high school. I mean, there was that window where he was offered the Xavier job with Pete Gillen, and he stayed, you know, in large part, I think, because, you know, of Bob, and Bob was going into his freshman year of high school. And but he showed his love for us through the time he spent and all the work ethic and the character that he instilled in us that maybe you resent it when, you know, you resent it when you're a teenager, maybe you resent it maybe when you're in your 20s, but then you appreciate it when you become a parent, and you appreciate it when you get into your 30s and you realize, you know, how much it's done for you.
Who's the most emotional?
I couldn't have said that any better, Jeff. Dan, that was unbelievable. But I'll just add just the selflessness that, you know, that my dad and my mom had for us, you know, just the, you know, paycheck to paycheck. And you know, that paycheck most likely was going for a camp that we might go to in the summer, and, you know, wasn't going in their pocket. And like Dan touched on, just so unselfish with their time for us, which, and the preparation for obviously for us for the future was unmatched.
The most emotional Hurley is who? And you can't – male Hurley, not female Hurley. The most emotional male Hurley is who?
I cry a lot.
Is that true? Do you? What do you – what's the last time you cried was what? Over what?
You know, the day of Wednesday, Aubrey Jimenez, you know, and Mario, you know, who passed away and lost her battle with cancer. Huge UConn fan, family, Jimenez family, Mario and Kimber from family from Bridgeport. Huge UConn fans have moved to Florida. He's a big time baseball coach in Florida, runs an academy there. His daughter, Aubrey, passed away. We met her in March on Selection Sunday. And she passed a couple months after, and you know, the parents came in to meet with the team and talk to the staff, and you know, it was emotional. But after a big win, a tough loss, proud of your kids, proud of your brother. I mean, you know, just it's, you know, laugh, cry, yell, it's all good.
Bobby, what's it been like for you this year? It's hard because I know you have some pressure to win this year. I try to put in perspective for people. I went to Arizona, so I know what that Arizona program has been like and how difficult it is to win there and how few people have won. You had gone to two straight tournaments, were set to go to a third straight. I don't know if that's ever happened at the program before, that they've gone to three straight NCAA tournaments. There's not a ton of history there. How have you been able to navigate that part of it, the emotional part, like Dan said, with everything that you've kind of gone into the season, trying to focus on just coach and not worry about the outside noise? That it's not easy to do, especially for you guys.
I got an unbelievable support system. You know, I could call Dan anytime and talk to him, obviously, and we talk all the time. But, you know, my wife, Leslie, is unbelievable. My daughters are so supportive. I kind of blank everything out during the game, and I'm just locked in. It's kind of like the Kevin Costner movie when he's pitching and, you know, and stuff, where you, you know, turn on the mechanism or whatever. But, you know, my daughter Sydney is behind the bench, or my daughter Cameron, and I could hear them yelling, you know, stuff out during the game and stuff. So they are their awesome support and just behind the scenes stuff. Like if I'm going through pressure or a stressful situation that I'm working through, to have, you know, my wife, Leslie, my daughters, you know, Sydney and Cameron, and my son, Bobby, to be able to talk to. And I have my son on my team like Dan does right now. So what a, you know, what a great feeling that is to have him around. I can't tell you how many games, you know, we've watched together over the years, and to see him out there and have him on road trips and go to dinner the night before games. So it kind of puts everything in perspective for me. And, you know, the pandemic was really tough. We had to wear a lot of hats and do a lot of different things as coaches we've never had to do before. And you add the NIL and the transfer portal. It's just been a lot to like work through and navigate through. So just trying to stay in the moment, enjoy my team, have fun with these guys. I've really, really been blessed with the great group, and it's been a lot of fun coaching them.
On top of those two things, the portal and NIL, kids have changed from when you guys played, from when I played. As two coaches who are probably considered more old school, how much have you had to adapt, or how much have you had to change your philosophy on some of those things?
I think you got to just, you know, manage. It's about managing people and understanding what makes people tick and different personalities. And you coach guys a little bit different based on that. I think these kids have a lot more to deal with than Dan and I did when we played. And I mean, you could just start with social media. It's like, if I had a bad game, I mean, you know, people might see it on TV or read about it in the newspaper, but people aren't tweeting at me. You know, right. You know, it's just like different. The pressures are different for these kids to, so you got to be, you know, recognize that, you know, they have a bad game, they're going to get potentially attacked by whoever on social media. How does that impact them and stuff? So, you know, we try and, you know, have a pulse on those things and try and limit their pressures as much as we can.
But there's still Robbie too. I think it's like relative to trying to find that there still are, you know, some like families and inner circles and kids themselves, you know, that still kind of, you know, have that value system, you know, like that you could still find the shared values, right? Mm-hmm. You could still, you know, find, you know, incredibly competitive players that really want to win, you know, that have a gym rat mentality, you know, that are willing to sacrifice and want to be on a mission with a group. I just think that there's less of them. Obviously, there's less of them, and you've got to kind of work harder to find them. I think that the good thing for me and Bob is that, you know, we get eliminated from certain types of people because they'll come and take a campus visit, and they'll watch us practice, and we're both really authentic. You know, like we're family people. Like Bob said, like, you know, everything that we do is family centered. My wife Andrea, you know, I got lucky, just like Bob did. We both married Jersey girls that will check us in a second, right? Check us in a second when we're getting a little too big for our britches. You know, and then, you know, both of my sons, Danny and Andrew, are like incredibly close to the program. So we both want to be a part of like transformational situations with the people that we encounter, our coaches, that hopefully will elevate the players and not transactional stuff.
All right, well, listen, Robbie, what do you think? The Hurley experience, you know, first one for you?
Yeah, I think it was pretty tame. I'm impressed. I thought they were great.
Yeah, you got a mellow. Listen, you got them at 19-1. This isn't normal to get Bobby and Dan. This, look at them. They're both smiling. This may never happen.
I'm honestly shocked that they'd agree to come on here with you, because you make it sound like it's going to be chaos.
Listen, I might have had to give them a little bit extra NIL or something to get them on here. But I love doing – I've known them both a long time. It's very, very cool to see you both winning at this level. And Dan, you might crack my top 20 when I revise my top 20 recruiters. You might. It's close. I don't know. It's close.
21.
There's nothing wrong with being 21.
It's a 21.
That's right. Thanks for joining us, guys. Appreciate it. And good luck in the future, and we'll talk soon.
All right. Later,
guys.